overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Many blessings to you.
For whom the bell tolls. The bell tolls for thee. And so we observe the energy of stopping, the energy of turning within and discovering that stillness that's always there. If you have a difficult time finding the stillness, I invite you to just touch your heart chakra. They call this the cave wherein God lies. Come on, beautiful. And she's touching her heart. How lovely is that? And so when we enter the cave of the heart, we recognize that there is a felt awareness that's always there. And we open to experience it. It was the Buddha himself that says we don't learn from experience, we learn from our capacity to experience. So what is your capacity this Sunday morning to open to this universal aspect of the self, to this awakened presence that we all share? It's a unity. And that we're all in it together. The one mind, the mind of the universe, the one heart, the heart of the universe. And we share that. This Sunday morning, I'm going to explore finding the extraordinary in the ordinary. So what is our capacity to see God in the smallest of things? It was William Blake that said, to see the world in a grain of sand and heaven in a wildflower. So could we see the face of God in a leaf, in a tree, in a chipmunk? Oh, the poor chipmunks. Someone called them a mouse with a stripe on its back. And so we smile to the 10,000 things, the many different aspects of the one life. And then we hear Jesus who said, be like the lilies of the field. They toil not, neither do they struggle. Yet Solomon in all his splendor was not arrayed as one of these. And so when we can see the extraordinary presence of the Beloved in a lily, in a chipmunk, in a penguin. Barbara Rollins gave me this stuffed penguin because she knew it was my spirit animal. I didn't realize that she got me the economy size penguin. She didn't think about getting a little one. But then I guess if you're going to have a spirit animal, you might as well make it big and grand, so that you can feel your interconnectedness to life. And so when you're ready to play in the field of the unmanifest, I invite you to open your eyes, to be here now. The eyes are the window to the soul. And so when we look around, we're seeing this something that is divine by its very nature. Yesterday, I found myself going to my library, my gazillion books that I have, and I always let the one that wants to fall off the shelf fall off the shelf. And yesterday, it was Thomas Merton. Thomas Merton was this monk who died at a young age. He was electrocuted when he was in Thailand. Rumor has it now that he was probably murdered. He was one of those monks that dared to speak the truth to power. And in this little pocketbook of Thomas Merton's, he was speaking to his fellow monks at the Gethsemane monastery up there in Kentucky. And he said to his fellow monks, he said, "It's time that we realize that we are a unity, one life." And he says, "This isn't a new form of unity. This is an ancient unity. Hear, O Israel, the Lord God is one." Ernest Holmes, "If we teach anything, we teach oneness. One, one, one. There's only one here. And it outpictures in multiplicity." So that's a new way of seeing life, not as separate, but as everything is connected. In The Art of Living, Thich Nhat Hanh, in his last book, he says, we inter-are. We are each other. Now, is that too expanded of an idea to play with? Because as Jesus says, you have to be like a child if you would enter the kingdom of heaven. So could we enter a state of wonder? I was on the phone call this morning with my prayer partner in Canada, and we were talking about the suffering on the planet and how religious science has gotten it wrong in its Pollyanna way of always putting a happy face on a seemingly tragic scenario. I got up this morning at 5, like I do, and on my phone was a text from my little sister up in Idaho saying my 16-year-old niece had been in a tragic car accident. And then there was the little emoji with the tears coming down. She's 16. So all morning, I'm sitting there not knowing if she's going to live or die. And finally, I woke them up there in Idaho and found out she did survive the car accident. She was thrown 40 feet on the interstate. And I've never met this young girl, but in a holy instant, I found myself empathically suffering for her and for the family in this tragic seeming accident. And I live with this idea that there are no accidents. So could I open to the grace of what's going on up there in Idaho for this family that got together for a family reunion only to have this tragic accident occur when they're planning a family reunion? You know, who would have thought? And so we get to meet the moment in the most mindful, proactive way we can throughout life. And maybe that's the whole gift of life. You think it's going to be an ordinary morning coming to church, and extraordinary circumstances have me face a scenario. And of course, my beloved husband tells me I need to get on the flight and get out there and fix everything. I said, "Honey, this isn't a thing where you fly out there and you fix anything. This is where you just get to open your heart and be present to what is happening in a crazy sort of way, to find the unity there, to find the grace there, to see in the midst of the suffering." We were talking about grief this morning, and it was so beautiful because my prayer partner, he does an awful lot of funerals up in Canada. And he said, "David, it was so interesting. Yesterday, I found myself at this funeral talking about grief in a way that I've never spoken about it before." And he reflected to me on the phone call this morning, you know, there's that song, "Can't Buy Me Love." You can't buy love. He says, but there is a price for love. And the price we pay for love is the grief when we lose that love, is the price that we pay for that love. And as he's giving this treatise at this memorial service, I realized how beautiful then the grief is. It's not something that we consider toxic that we want to get rid of, but grief is a holy something. They call it good grief for a reason. Every time I see Bill Wilson's little thing out there, I feel the love that he put in that as he, one piece at a time, put that mosaic together to honor the soul of our center. And so it sits out there, and his beloved daughter here created that beautiful piece of art as an expression of her soul. So what if we get to be conduits for something that we share with one another in an extraordinary way? Like I shared with you, I'm talking about finding the extraordinary in the ordinary. Now, it's all ordinary, isn't it? And yet, it isn't ordinary. You know, I shared with you last week, I turned on Facebook in the morning and a woman woke up with a dog's head next to her in the bed, a strange dog looking at her. And she looked at the dog and the dog looked at her. And before you knew it, they had a relationship. Now, is this crazy? Yeah, it's crazy because we're all so connected. This beautiful life that we live out here is our own life. I was sharing with the people in the revealing service, there's three bags of lettuce in the fridge because yesterday I harvested all the lettuce from the garden. It was overwhelming. Trey said, this is way too much lettuce. So it's in the fridge for those of you who want lettuce. And then once you harvest the lettuce, you create space in the garden. It's like anything else. If you're in a relationship and someone leaves, you've created space. Now the question is, what are you going to fill up that space with? I remember when I had, and you get these extraordinary moments that seem ordinary, but they change your life. And you know, there's a lot of people changing here at the center. They're going to Portugal, they're moving on a whim. And I would say to them, you can look the whole world over for happiness, but if you don't carry it within you, you're not gonna find it in the Algarve. But I'm just saying, because I was one of those people that would always seek geographic solutions for life's scenarios until I came to Huntsville. And when I got to Huntsville, I stopped looking somewhere else to find the happiness, because if you can't find it right where you are, as Dorothy said at the end of The Wizard of Oz, you never really lost it to begin with. So what if we're here to discover this extraordinary something that is right where you are? You don't have to travel the whole world over to find it. You can find it right there at the core of your being. And it's always been there waiting for you. There's a wonderful, Dan Millman wrote a book called The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And he said, when you wake up, he said, everything changes and nothing changes. Huh. The world is still the same. All that's changed is the blind man now sees. I once was blind, but now I see. So what wakes up? And that's what this whole teaching is about. This something wakes up. This one that knows no other begins to awaken within you, and you begin to see everything is connected. Beloved Michael sent me this wonderful video on the wisdom of the Tao. And the Tao means the way. And what's so beautiful is when you become a student of universal truth, like every one of these yantras in the window are the different spiritual paths on the planet, and they're all pointing to the same thing. There's this something that flows through all of us. You could call it Atman, the soul. You could call it Brahman, the one that knows no other. You could call it the Tao, which is the breath within the breath. And that's what we are. So in this simple little teaching of the Tao, they talk about we're all in this flow of life. And sometimes that flow can be a stagnant pond. Anybody been in a stagnant pond that's going round and round and you think your life isn't going anywhere? And then all of a sudden you're in the rapids. Oh my God, get me out of this. And then you're gently flowing down the stream and you hear row, row, row your boat, not somebody else's boat, gently down the stream of your life. And you're four merrilies to every three rows. So you're supposed to have fun while you're rowing this boat down the stream of life. And you realize it's just a dream. Did the penguin just fall down the stairs? Or is that just a dream that I'm having? Yeah, and then you get a sense of humor. And that's going to save you in this journey of awakening. Next week, in the month of May, I'm exploring this idea of emergence. This something that is emerging throughout humanity. You can feel it here at the Center for Spiritual Living. Someone said we're a 23rd century teaching. Because we recognize that we're not here to give you a concretized concept of what God is and spirituality is, but rather each one of us is here to discover this intimacy with something that is what we are.
Wow, it's kind of a daunting thought there. Yeah, well, it really is. It's that creative something that lives within all creation. Well, what is that? Well, that's the question. Could you live in the question? Could you court the question? Could you court the divine imagination, Angkor.
Angkor can't figure it out with his beautiful mind. It's not going to come from there. But there's something in him that already knows. So could we be curious enough to court the mystery, the great mystery that the indigenous people talked about? I was sharing with the revealing service, there was this prayer that was sitting on my desk, and I was going to bring it, but I didn't. And it was from the indigenous people, and they talked about how could we call upon the Great Spirit to awaken within us so that we might hear this message that's always being spoken from the trees and the birds and the water, because it's all alive with presence. And when it starts to awaken, well, then you do see the extraordinary in the ordinary. Wheresoe'er I look, I see the face of God. And in that prayer, one of the lines was, and may every leaf and every tree teach me her lessons as I look at them.
Well, what do you mean, learn the lessons from the leaf and the tree? Well, I don't know what you mean by learn the lessons from the tree and the leaf, do I, Tia? Well, maybe I need to listen to the tree and the leaf.
And then I hear my brother Terry Boy, who tells me about the fungus documentary and how the intelligence within the fungus. And then someone says to watch the octopus teacher, and well, there's something about the octopus. And then you realize that it's all sentient. And maybe it's a little bit wiser than we humans. And then you go, oh, this is kind of crazy. I'm taking communion with a lily of the field, and I'm listening to the penguins now, and I'm looking at photosynthesis. You know, I have these amazing flowers in my garden that are blooming, and they're always a surprise. This morning I walked out and the gardenia bush is in full bloom. The pomegranate's starting to blossom. And they're all unique expressions of this creative something. And all they ask is that you stop long enough to begin to have darshan, to have kind of a tantric experience. You know, take the, like I was sharing with you last week, my John F. Kennedy rose, she blooms this time of year. And she's these gargantuan white flowers that are so fragrant. And as I was looking at the flower, I imagined picking one and bringing it here to you this Sunday morning and inviting you to slip into your light body and inviting you to dive in between the petals of the John F. Kennedy rose and drink from its fragrance. And then I thought, that's way too tantric, David. You can't do that here with these people at the center. And then the voice said, well, why can't you? Because if the sun can penetrate the petals of the flower, can your light penetrate the petals of the flower and have... See, she knows what I'm talking about. She's been in the flower before.
Whoa, what does it feel like to move between the silky petals and to drink in the fragrance of something that is so beautiful?
Well, then you understand Jesus to be like the lily of the field, to be like a flower who opens its petals one at a time. You know, Solomon in all his splendor was not arrayed as one of these. Could we take something as humble as a flower and begin to have an experience with it? You know, then you're beginning to, in a way, lose yourself to find yourself. My beloved Angkor reminded me that he said, I feel like sometimes I'm running away from myself. But ironically, we do need to die to the little egoic self that's been running the rules of the game up until now and discover something that was behind all of that that is so much wiser, that knows. You know, that's the place we want to find and discover. It's always been there. So this something is emerging, and I play with it this month. By the first week I looked at, we're beings of light. Now that means that you're an energy. Yes, you have a form, you have a finite self, it's perishable, it's not going to be on the planet, you know, forever. But the light that you are is an eternal light. So could we know ourselves as that light, as light beings? And every scripture talks about it, you know, Nur ala Nur, light upon light. And to be a light unto yourself, a light unto the world. The second week, I explored this flow of light that's becoming conscious. There's something waking up in each one of us. What is that? You know, as my beloved Nancy said, you know, when this something wakes up in me and I see an old pattern where somebody might have pushed my buttons and I feel like a victim of this individual, I realize I get to bless them and then work on myself.
Well, why do you do that?
Because they are me. So Jesus, when he said to love the enemy, to do good to those that harm you, he recognized in unity consciousness, you can't put anybody outside yourself.
Well, that sounds like a healing idea.
And it is a healing idea. It was Ram Dass, one of my early teachers, during the Vietnam War, which was a very traumatic time, especially for a young man who was being drafted into the military to die in a senseless war. And he was a bit of an activist in the 60s. And so Ram Dass would sit there and he'd create an altar where he would meditate. And he would have his guru sitting, a photograph of the guru. He would have a picture of Jesus. And then he would have a picture of Caspar Weinberger. Caspar Weinberger was the Secretary of Defense, and he hated Caspar. Oh, he hated Caspar. So he had to put Caspar right there next to Jesus and his guru, because to send equanimity out, You see, a picture speaks a thousand. Anne-Marie gets it. She gets it. So could we love the one that in a strange sort of way we've exiled because it is our own self? Now, that's what oneness would say to you. So yeah, it's becoming conscious. There's nothing outside of you. And then last week, I explored the idea of letting your heart be set on fire with this longing, with this love, with this creative something. Bob so beautifully plays his music from the heart. And he offered his services today. And how would I be to say no to someone who's expressing that beautiful energy of love through music? So at the end of the service today, we're going to get back somewhat to normal by singing the Circle song. Oh, Anne-Marie says, yes, you all have a voice. And you know the lyrics of that song. Do you want to hold hands at the end?
Yes.
Okay, well, we're flying by the seat of David Leonard's pants once again. We never know what's going to happen. But you know the lyrics of that song are, we are one. I am you, you are me, we are one. And in this unity, we will live in harmony. We chose this for a reason, and peace will come. Because we are one. And so there, it's only, there's one here. And that one is waking up. And when it does, we're going to see everything is really extraordinary, even the most common things. So I cleaned out the garden. I created space. It's so interesting. When I was a student of truth in the Atlanta Center, like so many of you are students of truth here, and if you don't have a vision for your life, if you have a pushy husband like I did, they'll give you their vision for your life. And his vision was that I would become a school teacher. And we had a plan that he would get his summers off. And I, as a school teacher, would get the summers off. And we would travel to Portugal and Ecuador. We would do this whole thing because we were school teachers. So I went back yet again to college. I got my master's in education with the teaching certificate. And I'm my first day of student teaching. And the voice within that I know so well said, this job will kill you. And I went home that day and I said, I'm dropping out. You dropped out. You destroyed the dream. It was his dream, not my dream, Anastasia. And so he said, well, this was his moment of insight that comes through in those moments of crisis. He said, all I can say to you is you've created a void in your life. So be very careful what you fill that void with. And whatever you do, don't become a minister. Well, I'd never put that thought in the garden of my consciousness. You know, I was taking silly classes at that center. But you know, the universe has a way of taking a seed idea and having it manifest in a way that you never thought would manifest. Because I never, ever wanted to be a minister. The mind in me said, religion is the opiate of the people. That's the last thing I would ever do. But I didn't see this as a religion. I saw this as a doorway for a spiritual awakening that has never ended and continues to flower. It's this emergence. And it's open enough that I can actually, for 33 years, keep diving deeper into a revelation that gets clearer with every day I'm on the planet. It's all about love. And love is right there at the core of that car accident this morning. There's so much love in that family for that little girl who's in recovery. Her name is Leah, and I know you're all holding your inner hearts. So was it a bad thing? It was a thing, you know? And when we survive in this amazing dance that we call life through the trials and tribulations of a long-lived life, hopefully it gives us some wisdom and some gratitude. You know, I was one of those that lived through the AIDS crisis as a young gay man, and I was talking to my prayer partner. Every one of his partners that he had when he was young all died from AIDS. And he said to me this morning, he said, you know, it's a miracle that I didn't get it and die from AIDS, that I'm still here. And so when you survive something that was kind of like a pandemic for gay people in the 70s and 80s, it does something to you. It gives you an empirical kind of push from behind. And you realize how grateful it is to have this life that so many of us take for granted. It truly is a gift. So are you living the life then that wants to emerge through you? Are you living the life that your soul craves? Or are you conforming to a lesser than idea that the world would have you consider as appropriate? So then you're at that beautiful threshold of being honest with yourself. To thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day. Are we being true to ourselves at this stage of life, wherever, whatever stage you're at? So, yeah. Because it's spring, I pulled out my little book, The Gardener, by Gruen. He's the Spanish poet. It was translated from Spanish into English. And The Gardener has a way of seeing the extraordinary in the ordinary, and he tells his young apprentice how to do that. And it's so poetic, I thought I would share this with you. Find my readers. You know, when you stop wearing glasses, you have to always find your readers, because they're always somewhere, yeah, hanging around. And I really don't need them, but I'm using them because I can. So here's about learning to hear the language of life, according to The Gardener. The Gardener says, coincidences don't exist. And when something happens that calls our attention in that very special way, it's because there's a message behind it. Something is trying to get through. As I was reading that, I thought, what was the message for my little grandniece in that car accident? She's 16. I think I would take her driver's license away and teach her how to drive a little more carefully. She went out on the interstate and was hit by something, and oy vey, something is shining from the deep and it's wanting our attention. So how does one read the messages that life is giving us? Asks the young man to the old gardener. How do you read the messages that life is giving you? Now live in the question. Don't rush toward an answer. Here's what the gardener says. He says, you get the message, my young friend, says the gardener, not with your head, but with your heart. He says, the language of life, with a capital L, is in some ways similar to the language of dreams. It speaks in images. That's why I love Brother Jack, because when Jack came to me when he was 9 years old, he would have these otherworldly experiences. And he said to me, David, he said, it's speaking to me in images. And I wanted to sit at his feet as he was explaining to me what he was seeing. He wasn't getting an epistle from the universe. No, he was getting images. So this is what the gardener says. The language of life comes in the language of dreams. It speaks in images that make an impact on the heart. Images that create a clear sense that allows the mind to open up to an understanding so that the mind can open. That's why I use quotes like, be like the lily of the field. Does that make any sense? David's telling us to be like a little flower in the garden. No, I'm saying you don't have to struggle. All you have to do is open and bloom. Letitia is flowering. Did she do that? No, she just allowed it to flower. So be like the flower. He said a stork gives a feeling of good news, of something that's about to be born as a symbol. A wild boar promotes a sense of bravery and courage when you see it in the field. A sudden storm carries away those already dead things that are holding back the intentions of life. And a soft breeze from the universe that suddenly rises in the afternoon gives a sense of calm and a sensation of a caress that you're being embraced by life. To feel that cool breeze under a shade of an oak tree on a hot summer's day, the smell of the magnolia blossoms in the air. I wonder if you can, maybe with a little mint julep in your hand. When the heart is prepared to listen, nothing happens just because it feels like it. When the heart is prepared to listen. So take communion with life at whatever life is showing you. You know, my beloved Jean Anne is fighting this one chipmunk in her garage that she's made her arch nemesis. And I remember I woke up one morning and there was a little mouse that had escaped from the basement. She says, how do you get rid of them? I says, you don't. You learn to live with them. And here was this little mouse sitting on the chair in the patio. He didn't have the two stripes. He was truly a little garden mouse. And he was so cute. And he had that little nose that wiggled back and forth. And I wanted to make a pet out of him. And Tia said, he's a vermin, David. He's a vermin. No. So here's the young man as he's listening to the gardener. He says, well, I think I understand you, says his young apprentice, but I would need time to be able to read clearly this language of life that you speak about. I would need time. He was probably 16 years age, maybe Seth's age. And so the gardener looks at the young man with eyes of love, and he says, you have got all the time in the world, my young friend, he says. So make use of it, Angkor. Make use of it. Open your heart to life. Listen to it. And the messages will become clearer to your soul under the pleasant robe of silence. Now, do you see the imagery there? It'll get clear under the pleasant robe of silence. So the gardener recognized that nature speaks in a mute gospel. It speaks in silence. Could we listen to the birds that are flying overhead? Go for a walk with Nancy and Lee sometime, and she will tell you what the geese are saying to you from the trees as they look down and they show you. We have bird feeders and bird baths in our yard, and it's truly a wild kingdom. And the other day, Trey pointed out that the female cardinal was sitting on the bird feeder and the male cardinal was on the other side. And the male cardinal would take a little piece of seed and he would go around and he would feed the female.
Oh, well, it was so cute. He was eating and then he was feeding her. Then he would eat and he'd give, feed her.
And Trey said, do you suppose that's one of the baby cardinals?
I says, well, I think it's a love affair. I think he's getting ready to pop the question.
But you find yourself noticing things, you know, like the water bowl that we put out for the dogs in the neighborhood. All of a sudden, the robins have decided it's their bird bath. And so all the robins are having a gay old time in the dog's water bowl.
Well, am I supposed to tell the robins to get the hell out of the dog's water bowl so the dogs can drink it?
Or did I say, you know what? Water is water. There's equanimity in the garden. You all can enjoy whatever it is that you like. It's there for you. So yeah, so to find the extraordinary in the ordinary, to take communion with life, to bring your journal into the forest and sit around and say to the tree, teach me and show me the way. There are all these strange apps that are on phones now. Have you noticed? And there's one called Merlin. And it's this app where you push it and it tapes the sounds of the birds. So all of a sudden, you know all the birds you're listening to, the rare, unusual birds. Then there's another app that my husband uses all the time. It's called Picture This. And he nods his head. So we're going around Huntsville and we're taking a picture of this and a picture of that. And then we have to hear the whole history of the catalpa tree or the whole history of the Osage orange and how it got the Osage. And no, it's not poisonous. And yet, and so I'm spending my life learning about all this flora and fauna because of an app that I didn't have before. But now, so bring your apps to Portugal when you're there. And I'm sure it'll be in Portuguese, but you can figure it out. And what is it about the mind that it wants to know what it's supposed to be instead of just experience it as part of the mystery? You know, a catalpa tree is an exceedingly beautiful tree. I bet most of you don't even know what a catalpa is, do you? Yeah, they're gorgeous and rare. And then, of course, there's that Osage orange, which is prehistoric looking thing with those big balls that smell funny and are sticky. And they're not a relationship to the orange. But you can make a hedge out of it and the wood. Well, you can make pillars for the farm. See, I know all this information because of an app that I clicked this morning. Way too much information. When in truth, there is a knowing that doesn't want to have, bless you, that doesn't want to have the details, that likes not knowing. How is it that, how much energy is there to love? Now listen to that question, and don't go to David and ask him, well, how much energy is there to love? Well, what if there's no answer to that question? Well, then you're living in a fertile place of the extraordinary. So what is this thing called love? As Cole Porter would say, this funny thing called love. Who can explain the mystery? Why has it made a fool of me? No, then you enter into the foolishness of love. My God.
Well, you know, when you fall in love, you lose your common sense, Anastasia, and then you're caught up in a dream, kind of. It's like, and then what's it like to be in a dream? Well, I know, you're kind of blindsided because you're not seeing things clearly. You're seeing them through this distorted lens.
Next week, I'm going to explore this final month series on emergence. Well, then how shall we practice? That's a lovely question to ask yourself at the end of every month. How are you going to practice not existing as a separate person?
Well, that's kind of a crazy, you mean I've got to practice not being me?
Yeah, you got to practice not being you and try to be everything and nothing at the same time.
Well, I don't know what it likes to feel like nothing and everything at the same time.
Well, then you hear Nisargadatta. He says, when you realize that you're nothing, that's when wisdom is born. You're no thing, nothing separate. And then when you realize that you're everything, says Nisargadatta, well, that's when love is born, that you are that little mouse sitting on the chair. You are that cardinal feeding his mate, and you are the one feeding. It's all you. Gigi and Raul gave me a fish. I've had Napoleon in the pond forever. he's been alone for a long time. That's how he got the name Napoleon Solo. He was either Patty, Maxine, or Laverne when I had the three. But when Patty and Maxine or Laverne, I never really knew which was which. When two of them died, all that was left was the one. So he became Napoleon Solo from my days of watching whatever that show was. And all of a sudden, Josephine is with Napoleon now. And you would be surprised how sweet. He's very detached and aloof because, you know, he's cool. He's Mr. Cool Coy. And she is perky and she spins around his tail. She flirts with him. She slides under him. She's bringing his old bones back to life. And even when I feed him, he comes up for the food. You know, he's the king of this small pond. But she'll come up from the back and she'll take a little piece of food and then swim around him. And, you know, and I'm finding myself watching this strange relationship. Raoul called her, instead of Josephine, he called her Josie, because she's little and perky and free. So she's not going to be burdened with the handle of Josephine. No, she's little Josie, and she's having a gay old time. So what is she there to teach us? To see things with fresh eyes. To see that this is all a playful sense of connection, and that we're there with each other and for each other. I wanted to close today with something that was extraordinary for me. And when Thich Nhat Hanh made his transition on January 20th, that same day, he was on my Zen calendar. There are no accidents, no coincidences. So I took off the day on the calendar and I put it on the kitchen wall. And this is what Thich Nhat Hanh said on the day he transitioned. He said, when you see one thing with pure awareness, you see everything with pure awareness.
Well, you mean I just need to see one thing clearly? Well, according to him, you see one thing that it's all Pachimama? Well, then I guess you're free.
That's what this beautiful class, Ordinary Freedom. Once this something wakes up, everything changes and nothing changes. Because you realize there's no Michael Short seeing anything. There is this infinite intelligence flowering, and it's all the Tao.
Well, is the Tao, Michael. It's all the Tao and the 10,000 things.
And then at the very beginning of the Tao Te Ching, the very first thing it says, he who knows does not say, and he who says does not know.
Well, what does that mean? It means you don't know.
And then the Tao that can be described is not the Tao.
Well, what does that mean?
You can't limit it by a description. It's so much vaster. But something wakes up. So in the coincidences, the non-accidents of life, years and years ago, a man came to Huntsville, and he was a poet. And we had a reading at the center. He stood up here, and he read his poetry. And I was so enamored of his poems that he ended up writing a book, and he dedicated it to me. Now, I've never had a book dedicated to me. It's not much of a book. It's called The Hive, and it's a book that we read for its honey. And in this, he wrote a poem called The Bee is a Universe. And I'm going to use this as the closing poem, and then we're going to do a song and a meditation. But I want you to hear the extraordinary, remember, when you see one thing with pure awareness, you can see everything with pure awareness. So this poet, and Emerson called that the highest profession, because that's tapping into the soul. The poetic language is pointing to our interconnectedness to the extraordinary and the ordinary. And the most ordinary thing he could find was a honeybee. And out of the honeybee, he found the whole universe in a honeybee. I know Chris likes this. So this is for you, Chris. It's called The Universe is a Bee. So see if you can feel into this extraordinary poetry. He says, the universe is a bee, a small golden thing, hovering in the midst of a great darkness, as if straining to let there be light, flickering wings, throwing off sparks. The universe is a bee, and each eye of the bee is a bee, and each wing is a bee. It is a bee of bees. With bees for eyes, and bees for wings, and so on. Each spark that flies from its bee wings is a bee of light, is a river of light, is a river of bees. There are bees hidden in the bees, and bees hidden in the honey. Honey hidden in the bees, hiding in the honey, and hiding in the bees. The bee is a mind serene. That hum that you hear now is the bee at the center of everything. In the beginning, night opened a window and let out its own light and called it bee. Nothing was made that was made without the bee. And the bee said, let there be hives. And there were hives. And the bee saw that they were good and very good. There are bees hidden in the mountains among the cliffs. There are hives hidden in the trees and hives hidden in the ground. And in the rocky places and in the walls, there is honey hidden in the mountains and among the caves, hidden in the ground and in the many places. The bee is a mind that moves in beauty. Yes, the universe is a bee that hovers above that dark flower, taking what it is given and then turning it into light. Taking what it is given and turning into light. O bee of the universe, he says finally, give us your light necessary to find your dark honey. O bee of the universe, give us your light necessary to find your dark honey. Okay, so I'm going to do a little meditation and then I'm going to invite Bob up to lead us in a closing song. Hal, you want to ring the bell once up there? I don't need to get Raul out of his chair.
Well, there you go. Anybody can ring the bell.
And so we tune into the bee. To be or not to be. That is the question. And so as we declare, let there be light, well, then we tap into that light that is always shining from within. And we hear Jesus saying, don't put your light under a bushel, but let it shine. And so we feel the light shining through ourselves, just like the light would shine through nature. And we begin to see it illuminating all around us, Nur ala Nur, light upon light. And as we look around at this beautiful planet, we see the light shining through the gardenia flower in the morning, knowing that without the light, she couldn't produce her beautiful blooms. We see the light reflecting on the pond, knowing that the fish come up because they see the light. And it says a new day is dawning for us to embrace. We find the light in the darkness. And know that maybe darkness is the face of creation. Darkness was on the face of the earth, and God said, let there be light. And so we begin to see simple things with fresh eyes. No longer seeing ourselves as a separate, but as an interconnected piece of life's puzzle. And through life's synchronicities, we attract to us, by right of consciousness, that which is ours to sustain this life form, to motivate it, to stimulate it, to advance it in this dance called life. And so we open to the synchronistic moments, and we trust that what is ours to do will be shown. What ours is to be will be revealed. And then we smile to that emergence of this amazing life that is not over, but continues to unfold like a flower would in the field. And so we live the question to this beautiful presence. Teach me, life, to listen to your language so that I might learn the lessons of the Tao, to be in a flow, to be open to what is, to embrace the coming, knowing, as Emerson said, only the coming is sacred. The past is swallowed up and forgotten. And so without a projection into the future, we open to the next inevitable moment. We open to the breath within the breath. We open to the uncertainty and the unknown, knowing that there is an intelligence greater than we are that is assisting us in opening to life in all of its beauty, in all of its mystery. So we touch that mystery of oneness, that unity, that ancient unity that Thomas Merton pointed toward. Unity, universe, uni, one, verse, song, universe, one, song. I'm going to invite my brother Bob up here, and we're going to join together in a song. And I'm going to invite you, first of all, to open your eyes and make a circle. Anne Marie is going to lead the way. And if you feel uncomfortable touching someone's hand, you can touch their elbow. Or you can just refrain from taking it. I'm not afraid to take Tia's hand. We say yes 1,000 times yes.
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 So it is.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.